Dr. Cheryl, what are your top three tips for building a healthy long-term relationship? Well, I freaking love this question because it's the basis of everything I teach and everything I do. Welcome to this episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants, where, yeah, I'm going to share a really simple model, a model I developed, but it's very powerful to help you really focus on the three key areas that great couples learn to develop, or most of us never learn to develop, hopefully by listening to this podcast, reading books, taking your relationship as a priority, all the things I and other great leaders teach, you will make your relationship a priority and study and learn and do what I call make your love life a hobby. It's one of the slogans, one of the mantras, one of the phrases, one of the teaching concepts we use a huge amount in my work. And when I say we, I mean myself and the so far 650 couples who've taken the Become Passionate 3-month program with me. And some of them have joined my ongoing group. Amazing. Yesterday, I had a 4-hour Zoom workshop with couples where they worked through, guess what? The three tips to creating a healthy long-term relationship. So here we go. I use a model I call the passion triangle. Yep, the passion triangle, because a triangle has three sides. And a triangle, whether you know it or not, my friend who's an engineer told me this, is the most stable, strong structure in engineering on which to build a huge building. The Eiffel Tower kind of comes to mind to me. Don't you want to build your relationship on a healthy, strong foundation? Of course you do. Here's the foundation. What are the three keys to passion? I teach it as the passion triangle. The first key, the base of the triangle, I call intimacy. Now, I'm using the word intimacy very specifically here. I'm not using it as a euphemism for sexuality. People say, oh, we were intimate yesterday. That's a perfectly fine way to use the word intimacy, but I define it differently for this work of the three keys to passion, the three keys to a healthy long-term relationship. Intimacy is communication, sharing your soul with someone, which may sound a little esoteric. So what do I mean by that? Sharing your hopes and dreams. Do you remember when you were dating and you were adamantly, wildly, voraciously curious about this new person sitting in front of you, maybe over a dinner table? For me, it was a blind date with my sweetheart for breakfast at 7 a.m. over omelets and yam fries or something. Really curious to learn, that wanting to learn your person's inner world, how they grew up, what matters to them. Do they like dogs? Do they like skiing? Do they have a spiritual life? Do they want to be monogamous one day and have kids or not? Whatever your model is that you're curious about, to see if your models match. We shared a lot of who we were when we were dating. We were curious. And what felt so amazing was the person sitting across from us was curious and interested in us. They wanted to know our inner hopes and dreams. That's one piece of this first of the three key ways to have a great relationship, what I call the three keys to passion, is intimacy in terms of deep communication. And of course, particularly as we move through our first few dates together, that's also going to mean, how's your conflict resolution? Are you able to talk about your hot button issues? The top three things most couples fight about are finances, the kids, and sex. That may sound familiar to you. A lot of us have repeating patterns of arguing. The same topic comes up again and again. It's like a recycle of the washing machine of the same dirty laundry of you and I. Do you learn, or can you learn, or more importantly to me, are you interested in learning? Would you like to learn how to have healthy conflict? Conflict where you actually get somewhere, where you get at least to the most important place, in my opinion, from which the other good things happen in communication. The most important thing is to get to where you at least, and this is huge, understand your partner's point of view. They want to move to the country. You want to stay living in the city. This is a huge conflict. This is pretty much an impasse. It's pretty difficult to live both places, although you could commute between two. But the first step to great conflict resolution is the hardest one, really. And that's to actually learn and understand how your partner feels about this issue. There's many great communication skills in this area. I teach it using the other side of the clock technique. I've done a podcast on that. We will link it below. And then I move into a longer 30-minute communication exercise, which is a little more difficult to teach on the podcast. It's more of an in-person thing or in my program thing. But yesterday, my husband and I led this 4-hour workshop for about 50 or 60 couples on Zoom. And we demonstrated the full 30-minute exercise on one of our core issues, which is I'm a very organized person. I'm a planner. I'm a detail person. He is not. He's given me permission to share publicly. He's got very severe ADD, diagnosed as a young boy, plagued him his whole life. He's not very good at detail. He's not very good at planning things. His heart's in the right place. He's an amazing partner. But my big number birthday is coming up in a month, and he's taken on to plan the party. And I get controlling and worried because in the past, he's not so great with detail. So we did a whole demonstration for this group of couples on a long, deep, there were tears, exploration of one of our gridlocked issues, as the Gottman work calls it, which is a great phrase, or an ongoing issue, a repeated damn argument that feels so freaking familiar when it comes up. That's what we're talking about here. So the first key to great relationship I call intimacy involves partly sharing who you are, talking deeply. Do you know what's bothering your partner these days? Do you know if there's something at work that is troubling them, or they're worried about a friendship that's gone off the rails, or are you not really aware? Do you feel that your partner understands where you are at these days? Do they understand what you're excited about at work or in your future, or a cool thing you're planning to do with your friends? Do they know what's troubling you, what maybe wakes you at 4 a.m. and gets you worrying? How deeply are you connected in terms of communication? How do you resolve conflict? And I'm never going to shy away from the ugly parts of relationship. Of course, conflict resolution, conflict management, being able to have deep intimacy and trust and psychological and communication closeness also involves reducing and ideally eventually mostly eliminating ugly fighting, verbal abuse, name calling, criticism, treating each other with contempt, being defensive when someone brings something up instead of saying, hey, yeah, you're right. I got to look at that. That was partly my problem, and so on. Refusing to communicate. Do you just walk out of the room? Do you get in the car and go for your drive? I was working with a couple in my program just last month who they were doing this exercise on deep communication to understand each other around when they argue, they tend to not talk to each other for 2 days. They've got a young son, so they'll talk around, you know, who's picking Johnny up, so to speak. She'll go to work, he'll go to work, he'll get home earlier, go in the bedroom, shut the door, she'll sleep somewhere else. They didn't have anything in place to help them reconnect well after an argument. And when we went deeper in this exercise that I'm talking about, the male person said, when I sort of coaxed him and helped him to say more, he said, it seems like she doesn't even care. We're not talking for 2 days. She's taking care of our son. She's going to work. She's chatting to her friends on the phone. She sounds bubbly, lighthearted. She sounds like it doesn't bother her at all. I said, well, what goes on for you? And he said, I'm thinking about it when I drive to work. I'm thinking about it when I get to work. It obsesses me all day long. I feel horrible. I feel worried. I feel discouraged. I go home. I shut myself in the bedroom because I don't know what to say. And she was really moved and touched because, of course, she also didn't know that her partner was really struggling in those 2 days. They thought the other one needed space, and they'd never developed a way to come back together after a disagreement or a fight or even some ugly fighting to say, can we begin again? So that's a very brief description of something I spent 5 weeks on in the Become Passionate 3-month program. But I wanted to get this in your consciousness today because a few of you have written me and said, what are your top tips for a great relationship? Here we are. The first one, the first key to passion, the first side of what I call the passion triangle, these three key areas for a couple to become excellent at is what I call intimacy, communication, forgiveness, beginning again, apologizing, owning your shit, reducing and moving towards ideally eliminating verbal abuse, ugly fighting styles, so much more. I talk about that in other episodes. We'll talk about it in the future. But overall, are you really good friends who can talk deeply and well, who can handle conflict, who can agree to disagree, and who can work with a really tough issue, like whether or not to have another child? One of you wants to, one of you doesn't. Can you work with that? Can you communicate to a deep understanding of each other and eventually move to some sort of mutual decision? Many of us can't. These are teachable skills, people. Read a book, find an excellent couples and sexual therapist, please, an excellent one. Take a program. If you're interested in my program, I'll be offering it this spring, 2024. We'll probably open the doors at the end of April or beginning of May, kick off mid-May for 3 months together. You can get on the wait list. And of course, that's no obligation. It simply means that you'll be the first to know when the doors open. And also, when you're on the wait list, you get invited to some goodies in the month before we open the doors. I give a few Zoom coaching open workshops where you can come and get coaching for you and your sweetheart. That alone is worth getting on the wait list, in my opinion. But If it fits for you, do so. It's no obligation at all. Now, the second key to passion, the second really important area for couples to work on, the second side of the passion triangle, I call thrill. Now, this one, I suspect some of you listening will kind of dismiss it as, yeah, I get it, whatever. Don't dismiss it at your peril. There's a lot of reassurance to show how important what I'm calling thrill is. Dr. Cheryl, what do you mean by thrill? Good question. Thrill, think back. Think back to your early days of dating this person. If you're currently not in a relationship, think back to the early days of meeting and someone you were really interested in. Maybe recently you went on a couple of dates with a new person and maybe it fizzled out for some reason. But in the beginning, don't you remember the thrilled feelings, the butterflies in your stomach, the horniness, the excitement? Let's say it's your second date and the first date went really well and you agree to meet at this new Mexican cantina in your neighborhood and you get there first. You're early, you're 15 minutes early. And you're sitting there and you're waiting for your date to arrive and thinking about how great the first date was and whether there's going to be a hot kiss tonight. And, you know, you dressed up a little bit, you're anticipating, and you're scanning the room in this little cantina and you're looking for your sweetheart. And the bar is kind of in the way. You can't really see the door. You're kind of craning your neck to see. And when they walk in the room, those feelings of excitement, nervousness, fluttering. These are aspects of what I'm calling thrill. Now, early in relationship, it's pretty easy to feel thrill because novelty is a key reason we feel excited about something. New things are interesting. It's why we seek new experiences, new restaurants, new even TV shows. You might buy new clothes. We're hardwired in a way, to find novelty exciting. Well, that's a problem in long-term love, right? You see the evident problem. In long-term love, you're not new to me anymore. This is our 423rd date, not our second date. So thrill is something most long-term couples are crap at cultivating. Let me ask you a direct question. When's the last time you planned and executed a fun, interesting, exciting date as a surprise for your sweetheart? Answer the question. You can send me your answer if you like. hello@drcherylfraser.com. Let me know. Are you really good at this? If so, you're in a very small minority of people in a long-term relationship. When I say long-term relationship in the context of thrill, I basically mean something more than 2 years old. Because at around 12 to 18 months, all the biochemistry and physiology of the chase and the conquest and the moving towards some sort of commitment, if you decide to commit to this person after a while of dating or checking them out or whatever, the biochemistry, psychology, and physiology of the chase calm down and they switch more or less into the biology and psychology of contentment, of more security. Maybe you move in together. Maybe you buy a place. Maybe you get engaged. Maybe you get married. Whatever it is you do, there's more of a certainty being created. It's an illusion of certainty. Look at the divorce or breakup statistics, but it's an illusion of security. And insecurity, the biochemistry of humans, Homo sapiens, tends to move toward nesting, creating a safe cave, and having cave babies. All of which means that excitement of that second date in that Mexican cantina isn't there. Now, I was taken on a surprise date last night. I'm recording this 2 days before Valentine's. You'll get it a week later because I record them a week early. And I am teaching a group of couples on the 14th, actually having a welcome party on Zoom for a bunch of couples who've joined. They finished the 3-month program and they're joining my ongoing program where we do a lot of really cool things together, including getting together in person once a year for a big event, stuff like that. And so their welcome party to these new couples that are joining my ongoing group of long-term couples that work with me in the membership is going to be on February 14th, which is in a couple of days from when I'm recording this right now. So unbeknownst to me, my sweetheart, who will host that welcome party with me, he works with the ongoing couples as well, and he works with the men after they've done the 3-month program if they choose to keep working with us. Yesterday, I told you, we taught a 4-hour workshop together, hubby and I, and it was intense and tiring and absolutely bloody wonderful. And we finished about 3 in the afternoon. And so I said, okay, I'm going to walk the dog while you make supper. And then I want to watch a movie. He said, nope, we're going out. I said, what? And I didn't respond very well to this spontaneous offer of a date because I was wicked tired from teaching. It was a good, wholesome, well-earned tired. It was wonderful. But I'd just been holding space for people for 4 hours and doing deep work with them. And we demonstrated this really emotional exercise for them on camera. And I'm like, oh, and he said, yep. You booked us on Valentine's Day. We're doing the welcome party. So this is our Valentine's date tonight because you're also going to have other commitments in the next 2 nights. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. Thanks, babe. Super not into it.
And then I was a good sport after that. Took the dog for a walk, laid down for half an hour, put on some cute clothes, got a little gussied up. Off we went to a great restaurant. We had a lovely meal. Was it the sparkling thrill and anticipation of my second date with him when I was jumping out of my skin to see him walk into the place? No, but it was delightful. And that's what we do a lot. Healthy long-term couples create thrill by planning dates, by planning surprises. I just took my man on a 2-week vacation to Mexico. We just got back 1 week ago, and we went, unbeknownst to him, to the place where we were married 5.5 years ago. I took him to the same place we got married in, Huatulco, Mexico, and I took him there, and we had 4 nights at the same incredible villa where we were married. Then we had 4 nights at the little off-grid 12 cabins in the middle of nowhere, a tiny little bay in Mexico where we did our honeymoon. So I planned that thrilling event. Thrill needs to be cultivated. So often we hear there's songs about it, the thrill is gone or whatever, the thrill can't last forever. And that is generally accurate in most long-term couples' experience, but it does not have to be. I like to say the thrill can last forever. It just needs a little help. So the second key to a great long-term relationship, the first one being communication, what I call intimacy, conflict resolution, deep sharing, being able to problem solve, being able to forgive and apologize. The second one, the second key to a great relationship, the second key to passion is creating thrill with special events, celebrating special events, birthdays, anniversaries, Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is kind of a silly holiday, but it's a great reason to do something special and fun for your sweetheart. I was just treated to a Valentine's dinner 3 days before February 14th. It was great. We had the most delicious, the chef there is a French-Belgian, we had the most delicious apple cinnamon crepe with ice cream for dessert. And we shared it. Yum, yum. Thrill. Thrill takes effort. Get off your lazy butt, people, and romance your sweetheart like you did when you were pursuing them. You wore cute underwear, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're gay or straight, LGBTQ plus trans. You made an effort in your own way. You changed the old flannel shirt for a clean one. You made an effort and you planned. And most of us wanted to woo our sweetheart. We wanted to impress them. We wanted to put our best self forward. We thought of interesting, off-the-beat things to do. One couple in my long-term program, lesbian couple, they had their first date at a pool hall, and they played pool the whole time. What a great way to literally break the ice while you break the billiard cue balls or whatever, and doing something fun. One fellow I know in my program, this was for their engagement early on. It was winter, it was snowy, and he made a heart, a huge heart in the snow of rose petals. What did you do? Ask yourself this question. Answer it for yourself. Think of one date you planned or one special event you did when you were first dating or wooing someone who you wanted to get with. That's the energy I want you to bring to long-term love for the rest of your life. I have some couples in my program that are in their 70s, late 70s. One of them who hadn't made love or been sexual for over 20 years. And they became sensual and sexual again. They say they used to change each of them separately in the walk-in closet. They hadn't seen each other naked in about 20 years. Through the Become Passion program, they got to where they now, they say they walk around naked in front of each other and slap each other on their ass. They're in their late 70s. They also kiss in public for no reason and send us selfies to prove it. Thrill can last forever. It just needs a little help, which brings us to the third key to passion. The third side of the passion triangle, we've got intimacy, we've got thrill. Now we get sensuality, a word I also choose very carefully. It's not sexuality. It's not eroticism. Those are both included in it. But sensuality is the sensual aspect of your relationship. And here I mean all five senses. I mean the entire spectrum of sensuality. A lot of people get very caught up in the sex part of sensuality, which I adore, which is very important, which is a beautiful aspect of being in a relationship. But 30 to 40% of couples in a long-term relationship are in what is clinically defined as a sexless relationship. One definition a lot of sex therapists like myself use is you make love 6 or fewer times a year. Think about that. Are you in that group? Now, I know a good number of you listening. If you're in a long-term relationship, maybe been together 10 years, 20 years, 30, 40 years, you haven't made love in many years at all. And that is not a bad thing. And I'm not shaming or blaming. I'm doing the opposite. I'm saying you're normal. You're in a really big minority up to 35, sometimes 40% of couples. About 40% of the couples who join my Become Passion program are not having sex at all. And some of them, most of them, are interested in at least exploring new aspects to their sensuality together. So your sensuality, if you're not currently making love in a more traditional way that involves some sort of genital combination and some sort of orgasm or genital pleasure combination, we'll say that for now, many ways to define that, but for now, you may think of yourself as non-sensual. Hang on a minute. Do you hug? Do you caress your partner's back while you hug? Do you like to cuddle and spoon before you fall asleep? Do you like to hold hands while you watch a movie? Do you like to hold hands while you walk the dog? You may or may not, but start there. If you're not currently sexual or erotic in a way that you would define that, start with touch, start with comforting touch, start with being in touchment with each other. If you are making love occasionally or often, if you have a robust sexual life together, if you're quite happy with your sexual life together, if you make love on occasion, your desire is very low and it's what I call nipple, nipple, crotch, goodnight. It's very routine. That's not a bad thing. Routines are great, but you know, I touch you here, you touch me there, now we're done and now we go to sleep. There's nothing wrong with that, but you can do better. Now and then you can bring a little more eroticism, a little more delight. How did you make love in the first few months of your lovemaking with a new partner? The first few times might have been kind of awkward, crazy, fun, exciting, but then you probably got into, I'm just going to arbitrarily say the fourth or fifth time you make love with a new person, arbitrary number there, that you tried a new position or you got a little funky or you were willing to try things. We often are, oddly, more adventuresome sexually early on in a relationship with a new lover when we have less to lose. We don't have a future together. We don't yet haven't had maybe the conversation about whether we want kids one day. And so often the closer we get in the intimacy part of our relationship, communication, being best friends, wearing bunny slippers, snuffling around when you have a cold, I feel sick, honey, all that lovely stuff of day-to-day relationship does not lend itself very well to having a healthy, robust sexual life. Are you good at switching from being parents and nurturing your lovely little kid and laughing at the antics of the dog and caring for your aging parent to being an erotic being? Most of us are not. So this is a vast topic. I spend the last 5 weeks of the 3-month program on this, on sensuality in all its forms, moving from being sexless towards sensual. And if it works for the two of you, maybe towards some sexual life again. Or if you're making love and you'd like to explore more taboos, or you'd like to be more adventuresome, or you'd like to work with some of your own needs and desires, or some of your own traumas and difficulties, where are you in the sensual, sexual, erotic part of your life? That's the third key to passion, the third key to a great relationship, the third side of the passion triangle. Now, today's a very brief overview. I have podcasts previous in Sex, Love, and Elephants where I take a deeper dive into each of these areas. And don't you worry, I'll be taking a deeper dive into each of these areas in the months to come as well. But for now, let me briefly review. Thank you for the questions. What are the top three tips for a healthy, great long-term relationship? Number one, intimacy, meaning communication, trust, depth, the ability to talk about all the things that are really hard to talk about, to handle conflict well, to de-escalate ugly arguments, to forgive, connect, and begin again, to be able to understand each other even when you don't agree. The second key to a great relationship, thrill, which is romance, planning special events, cherishing your partner, making sure they know you appreciate them, celebrating them, doing novel things. When you go snowshoeing and you've never gone snowshoeing before, you may have been together for 40 years, but you're doing something new together. And remember, novelty helps thrill. And the third key to passion is sensuality. Do you stroke your partner's hair while you watch a movie? Do you hold your hand on their heart when you wake up in the morning to connect? And of course, the entire spectrum of sexuality and eroticism is included in what I call sensuality. There you go, the passion triangle, intimacy, thrill, and sensuality. Now, coming up on Sex, Love, and Elephants, we're going to have more of these top three tips. If you have a topic you'd like me to address, the top three tips on erection difficulty, et cetera, send it to us, hello@drcherylfraser.com. And I'm also going to be having a few more guests on the podcast, mostly in the fields of sexuality, or communication or relationship work, but also fitness, well-being, spirituality, and the other aspects of being alive and the other aspects that help make us a great partner. So stay tuned for those. But for today, that brings us to today's Love Bite. There are three keys to a great relationship. These are teachable skills. Are you sitting on your butt waiting to be happy, or are you willing to work on your intimacy, thrill, and sensuality? Remember, the thrill isn't gone. It just needs a little help. Till next time, I remain Dr. Cheryl Fraser. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants. But most of all, thank you for being part of this herd. If you enjoyed listening, please share this with a friend. And if you haven't already, I would love, love, love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review the show on your podcast player, because it really helps all the other elephants find us. If you have any questions or comments or maybe an idea for the show or you'd like to be a guest, reach out to me directly at drcherylfraser.com, where you can also sign up for weekly Love Bites, science-based tips for creating love and passion that last a lifetime.